Hey, is this thing on? Are we recording? Can I get a tech person?
Oh, for the love of ed tech.
Hey, Corinne.
Hey, Kara.
How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm pretty excited about our guest today.
We're having Michael on.
Yeah, Michael O'Shaughnessy from the Montgomery County Educational Service Center is coming to talk to us.
I always like talking to Michael because he's super knowledgeable about so many things and you never know where your conversation is going to end up with him.
Isn't that so true? I'm excited. Joining us today is Michael O'Shaughnessy, who is the curriculum supervisor at Montgomery County Educational Service Center in Dayton, Ohio. So hi, Michael. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for taking time out of your busy day.
Very busy. Michael is one of the busiest people I know.
Yeah, I do a thing or two around here.
just a couple hats you wear.
Yeah, just a few. As we start our conversation, I know that you have had an interesting journey, not only to your curriculum supervisor position, but just into education in general. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. It is, I got into education kind of in a non-traditional manner, if you will. I was the last graduating class of Fairmont East back in 1983. I went to Wright State for a year and kind of ran out of money. So I joined the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. So I was in the Marine Corps for 6 years. I was trained as an aircraft integrated weapon systems technician on F-18. So got to see the world.
That sounds very fancy. Yep. Yes.
Had to see the world, been all over the United States, decided to get out of the Marine Corps, and I stayed in California, became a motorcycle mechanic. So I was a motorcycle mechanic for Vance and Hines out in California for a while. Ran out of money because California is expensive, moved back here to Ohio, started as a mechanic again. I also worked at Morris Fitness, I worked at UPS and FedEx. So I did a few things, and I finally said, it's time to get back to school. So went back to school to be a material science engineer. That's what I wanted to do to begin with. And when I was in my chemistry class, the chemistry teacher was having just too much fun. So I kind of said, like, well, now this is pretty interesting. Plus, what I was doing is, since I was back in school, I was older than pretty much everybody I was in class with. Mm-hmm. They were asking me questions, and I was able to explain it to them. So I'm like, well, now this is pretty interesting. So I checked out that teachers, although we don't get paid a lot, it's not horrible. So I changed my major. Well, I started tutoring at Sinclair, and I got to tutor math and chemistry and physics there at Sinclair. And I said, all right, this is pretty cool. Changed major to education and graduated from UD with a Bachelor of Science in Education. Went to Chaminade Julian Catholic High School for 6 years. I was there. I got my master's in educational technology. So, and then taught at the Greene County Career Center for 11 years. And now I'm in my seventh year here as a curriculum supervisor. What I do like to bring up, though, as part of the my ed tech story, is the second year I was in education, I knew educational technology was going to be a game changer. I just knew it back then. You know, this was the 98, 99, 2000 timeframe. And I distinctly remember to this day when the principal, Mr. Trainer, walked into our faculty meeting and he looked at all of us teachers and said, you all will check your email at least once a week.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was rather interesting, you know, and you fast forward today. I don't know how many trainings I've done where we've done Google. It's a, you know, workspace now, online collaboration between several people. I'm doing those trainings, talking about Google Forms, collecting data really easy, Google Sites, people making websites. I mean, back in the day, you had to know HTML coding to be able to get a web page up. Now it's click, click, done. And now you have, you know, an e-commerce site up. So I like to say, I tell people I have like 8 email accounts that I have to keep track of. And if I didn't have my phone, I couldn't do my job.
Yeah. Isn't that
wild?
The truth. And now you just constantly are connected in your hand.
Yep.
No matter where you go. Because I remember, you know, when your phone, the thing I loved to do was just play Snake.
You had games.
Yes, yes, I remember that. I remember back when I had my Nokia phone that I had to have 2 external batteries because the phone would only last 2.5 hours.
My first phone was a Motorola, and it was bright yellow, and it was really cool because you could use it as a walkie-talkie. I think I looked like I worked at a construction site.
Yes.
And my dad would only use the walkie-talkie feature, so we'd be in like the grocery store, like in Kroger, and you hear this. Bidup. What are you doing?
My father-in-law was the same way. It's like,
we've come a long way.
Yes, oh yes, yes, we have. It's amazing.
That's hilarious. I want to go back just because I'm intrigued a little bit with the material science engineering.
Yeah. What
is
that?
Well, and like, what did you want to do with that?
Oh, well,
I
thought what was really cool about material science engineering, and I still think it's really cool, is the fact that material science engineers have to be very good at all areas of science. It involves chemistry, physics, and obviously math, too. But at the time when I was graduating in 83, composites, carbon fiber panels and things like that for cars were just coming into existence. And I said, you know, this is another thing. I'm like, this is the future. And if you look now, Tesla's all carbon fiber, I believe, their cars, SpaceX, the rocket, all the different materials that are involved with those. So would have been a pretty good material science engineer.
You would have been good at that for sure.
I haven't worked for 24 years because what I do is way too much fun. Can't call this work.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So, and when you first taught, tell me, what were you teaching? Obviously it was science, but
yes,
or math.
Yes. Both. That was at Chalmers Junior Catholic High School. I was hired to teach physics and chemistry there. So that's what I was teaching. And while I was there, I kept asking for laptops for my students, for the classroom. And they kept asking me, well, what would you use them for? And at that time, I'm like, I don't know. But if you give them to me, I'll find a way to use them.
I'll use them.
So I was at that stage where I didn't know because nobody really knew. But I knew if I had them, I'd find ways to do it. So I was able to convince them to also purchase sensors from Vernier. So we were using what they call CBLs hooked up to TI-83s. We were using motion detectors, and we were analyzing data on the graphing calculator. And that's when I said, hey, Vernier has a program that works on a computer, so give me laptops.
Very good.
So I got my laptops.
Nice.
Yeah, back when everyone was just using laptops for
processing. Yeah, no, the first.
That's all that we're used for. Or, you know, maybe a little Oregon Trail.
Very true. Nope.
You know, but it really wasn't used for anything robust. That we really weren't pushing the limits of what the capabilities were.
I started using those back then, and the Microsoft was the big company at that time, and I learned that's where I started to learn how to code. You started to learn Visual Basic for application. There was a website that did an activity, a simulation that talked about conservation of momentum, and it was free for like a year. Then all of a sudden, it went away, and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, what happened here?" So I got busy and I wrote my own program.
Nice.
So I wrote my own conservation of momentum program, and I used it there at CJ. And it was a simulation. You had two objects that were there, and you were able to give them initial velocities heading towards each other. It could be a completely elastic collision, inelastic collision, so forth, so on. What it caused was the beginning of all this, what you hear about now, all these simulations. The students could sit there and run these things over and over and over and over and over on the computer. And then we could turn around and go back to the lab on our air tracks back there and actually physically do it. So that was nice. So using technology was wonderful. Yeah. I can remember being in high school doing a physics lab to determine the acceleration due to gravity. And what you did was you had this mass hanging off the edge of your desk and this big, long, like cash register tape through what they call a spark timer. You turn the spark timer on, and it's just sitting there tapping, and you drop the mass, and it puts these marks on your cash register tape. Then you got to get your ruler out and say, is that a mark? Is that not a mark? And you're measuring everything. And it's like, it's horrible. Using Vernier equipment and the sensors and educational technology, you have like this thing called a picket fence and a photo gate. Students can drop the picket fence through the photo gate multiple times. They can do linear regressions and quadratic regressions to see the graph on the computer over and over and over and over and over again. So it was wonderful. I'm like, where was this when I was going through school?
Yeah, that's so cool. And I think that sometimes people either don't understand how you can incorporate it into some of the subject areas that we, I don't know, you know, you don't automatically place a computer in it when you think of it initially.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many avenues that you can take incorporation of educational technologies.
Absolutely. It's not just word processing. Yeah. So my big push for EdTech was using the sensors to collect data, analyzing the data, using, you know, my students, I taught them how to use Excel, the spreadsheet, how they could do linear regressions in there. And also, you know, keep in mind, EdTech is not just a computer. We were using calculators. Right. We were using TI-83s, TI-84s. Fast forward to today, when I was the curriculum director out at Valley View, I was able to convince the superintendent to buy the data collection equipment there. And now they've moved in what they call LabQuest Minis. So it's basically a pocket computer with a nice touchscreen display on it. So,
oh, nice.
So the students can use the LabQuest Mini the same way I was using a laptop in the classroom. Don't forget the little technology. A pencil could be educational technology too.
Yes.
Depending on how it's used.
Used. Yes. I know that's an important reminder, really. Mm-hmm. And because you mentioned sheets.
Oh, yes.
Let's go down that avenue. Yeah. So first of all, do you have any ideas for utilizing either Sheets or Excel with students?
Oh.
Start there.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Keep in mind the other side of technology. I thought this as my years have gone by. Everybody's like, oh, no, we've got to have Microsoft Office. I'm like, why do you have to have Office? They go, well, we've got to teach them how to use Word. I'm like, well, are you teaching them how to use Word or are you using it to type papers? Because if you're using it to type papers, you can use Notepad for that. Mm-hmm. So my big push was always to make sure, what are you trying to teach? If you need to teach Microsoft Office because your students are going to go get Microsoft Office user specialist certification, fantastic. But if you just want to teach a kid how to use a word processor, there's countless word processors out there that will do the job just fine.
And those skills are transferable across different platforms. And I think you're right. People get hung up on the big
absolutely.
Names.
Absolutely.
How are they going to function in the workplace if they don't know how to use Word? Well, if they use Google Docs or another word processor, they're going to be able to dive in there. And the fact is, I'm sure you're going to agree with me on this, is most people do not use 10% of what Microsoft Word can do.
You are correct. And that's where Google Apps came from. Google Apps came from their Google Apps way back in the day came from the fact that Google works on that 80-20 work philosophy. 80% of the time you work for Google, the other 20% of the time you get to work on anything you really want to. So yes, absolutely. Now, of course, Google owns it, but hey, life goes on. At least you get to have fun and do what you want to do sitting in a beanbag chair. So people took some surveys from Google and they went around, they looked and they said, 90% of the Microsoft Office users only use 10% of its ability. So these Google coders, they're like, well, we could take that 10%, put it as a web app and get it online and use it for free. So that's what they did. So the 10% of what people used Word for is in Google Docs. You know, I'll agree. If you're like doing legal documents and you need to make sure you've got line numbers right and introduce, you know, everything's got to be perfect. Sure. Microsoft Word's got all those capabilities of doing. But I also have to say, Google is coming pretty close. We'll go back to Google Sheets because I can remember when we just started using Google Sheets in the classroom. One thing as a science teacher that was missing was the ability for it to graph a line, do a linear regression. And you know, in science, we're doing that pretty much all the time. If you graph distance and time or velocity and time, you're going to get some sort of line out of it, or if something's cooling, heating up, what have you. So you want to do some graphing, you want to get a best fit line. Well, Google Sheets didn't have that. And so I was struggling because I was like, dang it, we can't use Google Sheets, got to break out Excel. So we would do that. So what did I do? I coded my own little program to do linear regression. So I said, like, cool. So as soon as it was ready to go, guess what Google did?
They released.
They released their own and they updated Google Sheets.
I told you, they're spying on you. We're convinced they've got our offices bugged. That happens to us all the time. I mean, we're not building programs, but we're like, it would be really nice if it did this. And then magically.
Yep.
There it is. sometimes I'll just put things out into the universe, hoping they're listening.
Somebody's got to be listening out there somewhere.
Yeah, someone, right. I'm sure more than one person is, but
right.
We'll not dive into that.
So as Google Sheets has gone on, it has grown into some, it rivals Excel. So far, most Excel users that I've run into, anything that they say, well, Google Sheets can't do this. I'm like, yeah, that can. Here you go. Let me show you how it can be done.
Yeah. So what would you say to teachers who are very hesitant about spreadsheets? Because we've done spreadsheet training for years, and I always tell people there's always just a handful of like spreadsheet people in the training, and everyone else is borderline terrified of spreadsheets. So what would you say to those teachers that feel like they don't have a use for a spreadsheet, or maybe they're not going to be able to use spreadsheets to help them?
Right.
I mean, do you have any advice?
Yes. And this is general advice for pretty much all things ed tech wise. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to connect because Google Sheets works really well with Google Forms. So I'm going to hook those two together. And I'm going to give a for instance here. Principal at a school needs to get information from their teacher. And he's asking me, he's like, well, how do I do this? And I'm like, well, you can use a Google Form. And he looks at me and he's like, a what? Right. I said, yeah, a Google Form. I said, remember that training that you sat in with me, you know, 2 weeks ago that we talked about Google Forms for, you know, like 3 hours? He's like, oh, is that what you were talking about? I'm like, yeah.
When I was checking
right.
my email.
Absolutely. So we sit down. I work through with a Google Form for him. We put the questions in there. We talk a little bit about it. We don't dive deep. We set the form up. We set the spreadsheet up. He sends it out. He starts getting information. I get back with them. And this is where the next step goes. You start showing them how to filter and sort the data that they have right there. And that's when they're like, oh my, look at this. Right. So
yeah,
my long story short here is as soon as a teacher or somebody asks a question on how to use something, that's when they're going to learn. You can sit in a Google Sheets training for 8 hours, but if you don't have a concrete use for it, you're not going to learn it. You're not going to grasp it. You're not going to know it. An English teacher was basically in the same position. She's like, I know I should be able to use Google Sheets to do something here. She goes, but I just don't know how to do it. So what she had was she had a form that she could change the assignment name. And what the students would do is they would go to the form, put their name in there, pick the assignment they're doing, and then upload or actually paste the link to their shared Google document right in the form and submit it. Mm-hmm. The form also included the period number. She was a high school teacher, so she had to deal with, you know, six different periods. So when all that data got into the spreadsheet, I go like, okay, so now you just want to deal with six periods. So watch, filter it for just six period. There's only your six period people that submitted. Let's filter it for just the assignment you're looking for. Now you're looking at just those assignments. And since they pasted the link to their document's right there. So they click on that link and the document opens. They can do whatever they want. Now, some of you might be saying like, well, that's Google Classroom. I'm like, yes, exactly. But that teacher wasn't ready for Google Classroom yet. Mm-hmm. What she was ready for was to understand she had a reason to use the spreadsheet and she learned how to use it. Yep. And just to finish up with the principal that I had talked about, he became a form monster. It seemed about every other week he had a form going out to the teachers asking questions.
That's great. Now, forms are addictive. We always say that's like the gateway application. If you're hesitant about getting started with Google Workspace, I guarantee that you have a use for forms.
Especially now, because for all the teachers in the state of Ohio, part of your evaluation is based on data and how you use data in the classroom to inform your decision. Mm-hmm. So if you have Google Forms set up for like an entry ticket or an exit ticket, I say do it as an entry ticket. Have three questions about what you talked about yesterday, right? Have it on there. Why the kids are coming in. They know they got to log in. They know their forms right there. They answer those questions. While you're doing that boring stuff in the administrative part of teaching, like who's here, who's not here, who's getting lunch, who's not getting lunch, so forth and so on. They're answering those questions. And then when you're ready to start your lesson for the day, you can bring up that Google form and you can look at the charts that they have.
Yeah,
right.
It's going to put it in charts for you.
Absolutely. So like I use science as an example. If I just got done telling and teaching them that Newton had three laws and I ask that question and I see 90% of my students think that he has two laws, I'm not going to move on with today's lessons.
Yeah.
I've got to recover.
Data-guided instruction.
Which is, I'm using data to inform my classroom instruction. And then not only that, since all that information is going into a spreadsheet, you start looking at longevity. So you keep this year's data, you keep next year's data.
Right.
You talk to your evaluator, say, look, I see a trend here, what's happening? And it's just like that. So you start becoming a data analyst, whether you like it or not. You will, but it's not that difficult. So the advice, find that one project that you need and then find the tool and learn it. Because now you have a purpose and you're going to learn it well.
Let sheets work for you. Like it's a workhorse. I mean, we're not big on using technology just for the sake of using technology. You know, we want to use technology to help you solve a problem, help you make your life easier, to, you know, like improve instruction, drive change in your classroom. So let it work for you. Let it do all that hard work and the calculations and analyzing the data. I mean, I can remember when I was in the classroom years ago, collecting data for like IEPs and things like that. And it would be a paper. And then you have all of this stuff to tabulate. Yeah. And, you know, you should put it in every day, but things happen. And then you're trying to put in all this data and you're trying to analyze it, and you could use a Google form for something like that. And it would do all the hard work for you. So we love sheets.
Absolutely. So I would say I agree with Corinne. You definitely want to let technology work for you. And yes, these paper, I go around to some teachers. I see things, paper and pencil on a piece of paper, and they're tracking this data. I'm like, okay, so what do you do with that now? And they're like, I don't know. Like, well, let's get it into a spreadsheet, because then we can start looking at trends and, you know, so forth, so on.
Well, and then it can drive like course evaluation and what needs to be tweaked. And if you're still adopting curriculums, it can
absolutely,
you know, drive that too.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, because we're on the topic of spreadsheets, I am going to ask you, what is your favorite EdTech tool, tip, or trick for teachers, or that you like to share with people?
Absolutely. The most powerful function you can learn, as we all know, for the spreadsheets, especially for Google Sheets, is the query function. Q-U-E-R-Y. Once you wrap your head around the query function, you become super powerful. One of the basic uses that you learn how to use the query function is when you have this big spreadsheet of like 140 columns. I can give you an example. The state testing test file that you get, the results, is 140 columns long.
Oh,
and what's really funny is the most important column is column BS. Yeah, I kid you not. So that's where the point values for all the scores are. But you don't, you know, so you're looking at all this data, and it's wonderful data to have, but you don't need everything. So I see teachers and administrators sitting there, and they just start deleting columns. I'm like, that's going to take you forever. Look, in 3 seconds, we can write a query function on another tab and pull just the columns that you want. And then we can even sort it in the order you want, and we can filter out what you want. So like if you just want column A, D, F, and the BS column, if you will, you can put that into a query function and it will just bring that data.
Does it open
so you don't
up
have
and
to,
say,
ah. Yes. Yes, it does.
It certainly feels
it
like
does.
That. To be able to add those conditions where you're essentially filtering all your data automatically is just like game changer. I just got on the query train like 2 weeks ago, and I was talking to Michael about it earlier.
And it's phenomenal, isn't it?
It's amazing. And another thing that we were kind of talking about the other day, Kara wasn't here for this, was how when you're using spreadsheets with students, you're also basically teaching them to think in a coding language. I mean, it's like a building blocks of coding. You're using those logical statements and commands and things like that. So I feel like there's a connection to be made there that maybe isn't being made in some instances. I'm sure it is in some places. But if
Yeah.
Like
if then statements or but if mm-hmm. when ascending descent. Yeah.
Well, I mean, even the same thing. It's like there's a function called concatenate.
Yeah.
And it's a big word, but it just means to hook two things mm-hmm. together. But you don't need to use that function. You could actually just in a cell type, you know, like let's say you've got stuff in column A, B, and C. You can go into cell D1 and type an equal sign and say A1 and then the ampersand and a quote, comma, space, quote, ampersand, C1 mm-hmm. and hit enter. And what it just did was took those two columns, put them together with a comma between them. But like Corinne's saying, that's a logical algorithm. You're going through those mm-hmm. steps, and that's what programmers do. Mm-hmm. They're like, they need an entry point, they need a process to get through, and they need an exit point. And that's what that is. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Kara, like you said, the if-then, you have if-then. So if this condition is true, then you do this. If it's false, then you mm-hmm. do something else. You can embed mm-hmm. ifs, so you can have nested if statements. And then you can even have a function that's called ifs, I-F-S. Yeah. And what that is a set of arguments that you put in there is it will run through until it finds the first one that's true. So you can use an if for teachers. They use an if when you're trying to figure out whether they should get like an A, B, C, or D mm-hmm. for letter grade. Because you can say if mm-hmm. cell is greater than 90, A. If greater than 80, B. If greater than...
Yeah.
So it's just one big long sentence like that. But and Google has made it so nice because if you just type an equal sign and just start typing part of the function name,
it just pops up.
The help box opens up and then you can click on a link and it brings it up again. You can go click on another link and it takes you right out to the website to get more information about it, see examples of it. So many things. And that's another thing that Sheets has caught on to that kind of caught up to Excel. Excel has a lot of things on their, you know, on the ribbon at the top mm-hmm. and through their menu system, where Google's menu system, the Sheets menu system, is very, very simple and very straightforward, but it has access through code and functions to do just about everything.
Yeah. So if teachers are interested or any educator, do you have like a good place for them to go to learn more?
The guy's name is Ben Collins, and I believe his website is Ben L. Collins.
Mm-hmm.
He is it's what he does. He teaches spreadsheets. He does talk about Google Apps script coding. His website is wonderful. He has a weekly email that has a tip on what you could use spreadsheets for. Some of them are really useful. Some of them aren't. His explanations are really good. But like I said, you have to search for Ben L. Collins.
Yeah.
Because I think Ben Collins is a car driver.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think. He may actually be the video that I watched about
queries. It's possible.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's one of the first ones that comes up when you start Googling mm-hmm. spreadsheet help.
Yep. Ben L. Collins is very, like I said, his explanations are great. It almost, I don't know, but he may have been a teacher in the past, because as he explains things, he explains them very well, very, very well organized, lots of examples. And he steps you through. He was the founder of a convention called SheetsCon, and I thought it was phenomenal. COVID year, it didn't happen, but the year before that, he just put it out there. He goes like, well, we're going to try to do this. And it was amazing. It was all online. So before everybody thought online stuff was the thing, everything was all online. Yeah. What happened was there were so many people trying to join that the host company that he was using to host the conference was crashing.
Oh, wow.
You know, he thought there may be, you know, like 2,000-3,000. There were like 25,000 to 30,000 people.
Wow. He underestimated the love for spreadsheets, apparently.
Alice Keeler was one of the speakers mm-hmm. at SheetsCon. A couple other high-level coders were there. Ben spoke about a couple topics. It was really, really, really cool. So I was kind of sad that he didn't have one during the COVID year, but he just figured that he couldn't put it all together in time to do it justice.
Something to keep an eye on in the future, though, for sure.
Yep. If you ever hear about SheetsCon, it was a wonderful experience. I have the t-shirt for that.
Oh, my gosh. It.
Yep. And we mentioned Alice Keeler. Alice Keeler is another person in general that we kind of talk about. If you ever see anything from Alice Keeler, mm-hmm. You know it's going to be some good stuff.
Great resource for teachers, because most of her stuff is designed specifically for teachers to use in the classroom.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Because she's still in the classroom. Right. So I think that's great. Everything that she talks about,
she's doing it.
She does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. She's using it in her classroom. And then Eric Kurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know Eric. Yes.
He's another one. If you see some from him, it's good. He was the classroom and then he moved into where he's at now.
Yeah.
So,
and he's got a great website too.
It's amazing stuff that you can do for free. So teachers are always looking for stuff mm-hmm. for free. You know, you may want to start coding. We know there's code.org and other places out there that you can code, but Google Sheets has a script editor in it.
Yeah.
And you can easily start doing coding right there out of Google Sheets, and it's free.
Yeah.
So,
and you can make some really cool stuff.
Yes. Yes, you can. You can actually develop a website right out of Google Apps script. Mm-hmm. You can write standalone scripts so that it's got a web address. You go to that address and it looks just like a website, but it's actually running through Google Apps script, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is.
Mind blown. Yeah.
Like they said, minutes to learn, decades to master.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Michael. It was so great to talk to you. I feel like we learned a lot.
It was my pleasure.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed our discussion today. If you like our podcast, please don't forget to subscribe to get notified when new episodes are released.
For more information about our podcast and to access links and resources referenced in this episode, check us out at fortheloveofedtech.org.